You're listening to the
number one station radio,
Trim Radio Network.
You're listening to The Brighter Life Show with your host, natural health practitioner, Dr. Leslie Berkland, and the Brighter Life Institute founder and vibration expert, Nicholas Brighter. Topics span from holistic lifestyles, meditation, natural medicine, spirituality, and finding your joy. Here at The Brighter Life Show, we want to hear from you. Call us at Trim Radio Network and ask questions or share your most uplifting story. Enjoy the show.
Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Leslie Berkland, and I am here with Nicholas Brighter from the Brighter Institute. You're listening to the Brighter Life Show. And hey, Nick, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm happy to be here today. I'm excited for the show.
Another Thursday. Another happy Thursday. We're on every Thursday from 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And we want to thank the fine folks at Trim Radio Network for having our show, on weekly. Pretty nice, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so today's episode, this is actually episode number 8. Kind of exciting.
Yeah, it's still feels kind of new, but I guess, yeah, we are on episode number 8.
I know. So. Time just flies when you're having fun on the air. Anyway, today's topic is multiple sclerosis. It's something that's really important to me. I'm very much involved in the Multiple Sclerosis Society. I'm going to be calling it MS throughout the rest of most of this show, just to tell you, most people call it MS, and that is just short for multiple sclerosis. So do you know much about it, Nick?
I know a little bit about it, but there's a lot that I don't know. I'm aware that it's a blanket term for numerous symptoms, and that someone might not necessarily have all the symptoms, but if someone has, you know, X amount of symptoms, then they're considered to have MS.
That is partially true.
Okay.
I mean, mostly true, let's
and
say.
I know that a person can be in remission or active.
Absolutely. In fact, we're going to go through all the different stages.
And that's about all I know.
Right. They call it remitting, and then there is remission. But why don't we just start off by telling people what multiple sclerosis means?
Okay.
Because that is the most common, I take that back. The most common question is, what is it? But I've never really just said what multiple sclerosis means, what MS means. What it means is scar tissue in multiple areas. So in multiple areas. It is an autoimmune disease, and it affects our central nervous system. And it basically, your immune system attacks the myelin sheath that coats your nerves as they, you know, go all throughout your body. And in the process of attacking those nerve fibers, it breaks down the sheath that coats it, that covers it, that protects it, that actually also helps transmit the signals. So when that is broken down, and sometimes there's scar tissue does build up, that's why it's called MS, which is multiple scar tissue. But sometimes it just damages it. It's just gone. So, it's like your nerves just aren't firing correctly. And so it's really an awful disease, because it's very misunderstood by the general public. And the reason is, it's not enough people actually have it.
I wonder if, just by what you described, if I know some people with MS can have periods where they appear to recover either permanently or temporarily. And if maybe that has something to do with the sheath being, you know, it's going to be in a constant state of recovering and being attacked at the same time. And so if there's a period where it's recovering more than it's being attacked, that
and that
maybe
makes perfect sense. And that is the case with people, but not with everyone. So everyone, if it was unique, is everyone is is completely different. So even though there's definite stages that are defined, the actual what stage you're going to, what symptoms is going to happen to you.
At each stage, there's different symptoms?
Yes, there's different. Well, okay. No. See, that's what I'm saying. It's just that the symptoms worsen. Or that you may, some may be added. Some may seem to go away. But it, all in all, as each stage, just like the stage of any disease, it just simply worsens and is unlikely to be reversed. So just think about, you know, your brain has to get these messages, you know, of what you're feeling, you know, what your body is feeling. And so it's getting mixed messages or simply not even getting the messages at all. It doesn't mean that your nerves aren't working, but they're just not firing correctly. Now, most people with MS, oh, you know what? I'm going to backtrack because I had mentioned just a little bit ago that not enough people have it where the research companies are doing enough research. So it's not like other diseases, and this would be considered a chronic disease. There's just not enough people that have it globally. Let's say there's 7.5 billion people on the planet. You know, I've heard that number a little bit less. I've heard it all the way up to 7.8. I don't know why we can't count people, but I guess we can't. We don't know, but it's safe to say, I think 7.5 billion people on the entire planet, and 2.3 million are diagnosed as having MS.
Okay.
So that's not enough. That's way less than 1% of the global population. So the pharmaceutical companies aren't spending money a whole lot. I shouldn't say they're not spending money. Yes, they are.
It seems like that number is enough for there to be some profits. But from what you're saying, it's not enough for there to be a lot of competition, I guess.
So, yes. And so what happens to happen is a lot of people independently will start doing fundraisers and raising money for research. The Multiple Sclerosis Society of America, the National Multiple Sclerosis Society, takes donations, and so that they can, you know, help with the research.
This would also mean that individuals that have this disease that have a story where they've done better than others, they might have something to listen, you know, might be worth listening to from others.
Well, I have MS, as you know, and I just want to share that with everyone. I was diagnosed many, many, many years ago, and I was in remission.
I believe I heard you say when you were still a child or adolescent.
No, I was in my 30s.
Oh, okay.
And so I was diagnosed, or late 20s. I was diagnosed, and because I had some vision problems, and then I became a little disorientated. And a couple of things just happened to me. And, you know, I went to an eye doctor who immediately that day sent me to a neurologist, and they found some little lesions, you know, in my head. And that's one of the signs of having MS, but they have to do a few other tests to make that determination to conclusively say that, yes, we believe that you have multiple sclerosis. So yeah, that's sort of what happened. 30 years went by, or 25, 30 years, without any symptoms. Other than just an occasional being disorientated. I stopped driving at night because I had night blindness. But it wasn't a huge disruption. I wasn't on any kind of medicine. I didn't even really research it.
And your initial symptoms, did they improve?
Oh, yes. It was just an eye flicker.
So you had some initial symptoms that led you to see a doctor. They diagnosed you with MS. You recovered from your initial symptoms. And then for 2 decades, it was essentially as if you knew that you had MS, but you essentially had no symptoms.
Yes.
Or very few. You had night blindness.
Yes, just with the night blindness. And then I would get sometimes a little disorientated.
And disorientation.
And that would be it. And what's that called? Because there's the levels of the different stages of MS. That's called CIS, or clinically isolated syndrome. So that's when they very first, it's sort of a single first episode. The symptoms last, you know, a couple days. I mean, the main reason why, you know, you went into to see the eye doctor in the first place, who then will always send you on to a neurologist. And, you know, if another episode occurs within a short time span, then a doctor would probably send you back to the neurologist and have them do some more testing. But so that's sort of what happened. I knew I had MS, but I just didn't want to really think about it. And I wasn't having a problem. So why make a big, huge deal? I certainly didn't want to go on pharmaceutical drugs, you know, at that point for something where I didn't have very many symptoms. And I went on to have kids and raise kids. And, you know, so it was really kind of interesting. Now, the next level.
Now, how common is that someone will be diagnosed with MS and then for a few decades live a mostly normal life?
Very common.
Very
People
common.
Are usually diagnosed initially between age 20 and 40, and they will go, it's not uncommon to go 20 years.
Okay.
So and that's, then that's, all of a sudden, then it's between, most people are, I don't want to say re-diagnosed, but they revisit their doctor because they have four symptoms starting about age 50 plus.
Okay.
So, and you're at more risk.
So that's very,
yeah.
So your timeline is quite common?
Yes.
Okay.
It is. It's not for everyone because it's mm-hmm. such a unique disease, but this is just a higher percentage.
It's not an uncommon timeline,
exactly.
But the timelines can be very different.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, so the next stage is called relapse-remitting MS, and it actually is the most common form. Around 85% of people with MS, you know, the ones that are initially diagnosed, mm-hmm. This is the one that they have it, and they sort of stay in this stage. It would be a second stage category for very, very long time. I mean, sometimes until they're, you know, really, really old. That's what I was hoping for. The next stage, it doesn't mean that you don't have a lot of the symptoms. You just will be in remission. They call it a relapse. Like, oh, you know, I've had a relapse, which means you have these symptoms where maybe you can't walk or you have some difficulties, and that only lasts for 24 hours to a couple weeks, and then you're fine maybe for a year or two.
Okay.
Or maybe more often, it just depends, but about 85% of the people, I'm not saying have this, but that's their initial diagnosis.
And I wonder if, you know, when people are in remission, or when people are, what do you call that? A relapse. Mm-hmm. When their MS relapses and they then have these symptoms, you know, reoccur, if maybe them starting to maybe pamper themselves or be a little more health focused allows their body to, because it seems that they're really close to this balance point where they're being attacked just a little bit more, and then maybe them being more health conscious allows them to recover where it's only temporary, or why do you think that is?
That would be nice if that was the case. That would be ideal if that was the case.
Do you think that is?
No, I think that what happens at that stage is you immediately go to your doctor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're, and you, like, what can I do? What do I need to do? Because people initially always think, I need pharmaceutical drugs. I don't want to feel this way.
I suppose another thing is that people that are in remission for a long time might completely forget that they have MS. And so maybe they're living in a way that's not, you know, they're pushing the limits maybe because they've
I think you're absolutely right.
You think that does happen?
Yes, because that happened to me. I didn't even think. It's not like every day. Right now, I don't have a choice but to think. I have a constant reminder that I have MS. Mm-hmm. Then I didn't have a constant reminder every single day.
Okay.
And so a lot of people have night blindness. I didn't say I have night blindness because I have MS. You know, I didn't even consider that. So that was, it's just kind of just how
you,
it works.
You forgot that was...
I did.
At the time that you got... that was probably what the reason for the night blindness.
So the next stage, there's only two more, is primary progression MS. And that is the stage where I am currently. And it's where your symptoms worsen progressively without early relapses and there's no remission at all. So it's not fun, but at least I'm stuck in this phase. And so this is it. This is my world. How am I going to live in this world?
Can you be in that phase and never go to the final phase?
You
described that phase as symptoms being progressively worse, but can symptoms stop getting worse? If symptoms stop getting worse in that phase, is a person still in that phase or are they in remission?
You mean if the status quo?
Yeah.
Well, they progressively get worse, and the status quo is not fun.
If their symptoms get a little better, because from what I understand, you couldn't walk
in
for a period of time, but you can walk now.
I can walk today.
Yeah. So you can walk today. So there's times that you can't walk, but from what I understand, there's times where you're bedridden for a very long time.
That's right.
And so, are you in remission when you can walk for an extended period of time? Or
not an extended period of time. But no. Like, I'll give you an example. Today, I did not have to use a cane all day.
Okay.
Yesterday, I was so wobbly that I felt like buying the T-shirt. A lot of this, I shouldn't laugh about this, but it is kind of funny. People with multiple sclerosis will oftentimes buy this T-shirt, and it says, "I'm not drunk. I have MS." Okay. So it's like if you're out at the store and all of a sudden you're wobbling all around, you look like you're a drug person. Mm-hmm. And people would, you know, think, oh, whoa, she's still all tipsy here at the grocery store. Mm-hmm. You know, so I always have a cane in my car. I have a cane at each entrance and the back entrance to my house. To my office. So I have a collection of canes. And I have to tell you, Nick, I think canes are kind of cool because I've decided that they're kind of cool. My canes are blinged out. Mm-hmm. Like they have like crystals around the top because I'm at this stage.
You mean diamonds?
Yeah, oh, I'm sorry. Yes, diamond. I wish. But because I'm at this stage, this is where I am. It's where your symptoms worsen progressively. But yes, you're right. They can flatline, but it's still so much worse than when you were in the relapse-remitting MS stage. So they've worsened. They're progressively worsening. You don't really have a remission, but you can plateau. A remission is we basically you don't have any symptoms. It doesn't mean, you know, you're in remission. So that's just not going to happen when you're at this stage. And the last stage is, oftentimes people are just in a wheelchair. And not only do their symptoms worsen, they get symptoms where they're cognitively challenged. And there's just so many other issues. So I just hope that I won't ever get to that stage, but if I do, I know that I'm prepared. I'm prepared for it. So I'm going to just share some.
You're prepared mentally.
Prepared mentally, and I'm prepared physically. My mind knows what I can do. So I think, okay, I could be at the store, but I may all of a sudden get wobbly. So I take some, you know, precaution, unless it's very urgent or very short distance. Some people will get what's called drop foot. And that's where one of your feet, it drops. It's like the muscle's just gone in your foot and you can't lift your foot up. So you don't want to have drop foot while you're driving your car, because drop foot, you can be walking across a room and have it instantly. Okay. There's no, like, hey, you're about to have drop foot. Your foot's a little more numb than usual. You don't know.
Okay.
You don't know. So there's certain things. So I always have, you know, some people drive me around. So I can't even think of the last time I actually
now
drove a car.
When someone is wheelchair bound with MS, because you described numbness. So, and I believe with MS, a person is, you know, a person can be, is the paralysis from MS, is it a paralysis or is it a not being able to, or is it a numbness?
It's more of a numbness because you can move and you have muscle memory.
Mm-hmm.
So like I have no feeling.
I am aware that diseases where a person is completely numb though, but they still have, but their muscle still works. For most people, that actually paralyzes them, but that there are cases of people when the muscle is not actually paralyzed, of being able to teach themselves or still having some muscle movement. So in the case of MS, it's a numbness. It's not a muscle paralysis.
It's numbness.
Okay.
And because I do have feeling in the bottom of my feet occasionally. Like if I stepped on some glass or stepped on nail, I would have no idea.
So when a person's arm is asleep and it's numb.
It's very much like that.
It's like that.
Where I could look at it and make my fingers move because I have the memory. And then I have my other hand is fine.
Mm-hmm.
So I can mimic that hand.
Okay.
But as far as typing on a keyboard, well, that...
You don't have fine detail movements.
Yes,
so.
I can't. I don't even remember. I have to think to myself if I put something in my left hand. And typically it's the left side. Do not know why. But typically it's the left side on most people.
Okay.
So that have, you know,
that's,
MS.
That's
interesting. Oh, and by the way, more women have it than men.
Okay.
It's about...
That's interesting too. I wonder why the left side, why more women than men?
They don't know. You know, there are certain diseases that they know the causes, which is not the cause for everyone, but they basically have some ideas. They don't really have something where they can say, don't do this, don't do that, because it could lead to multiple sclerosis. They don't show that it's, you know, you inherit it. So that's why they're saying that they don't know a lot, but then they really do know a lot because they know all the early symptoms. They know what the symptoms are. Now, some of these are early sign symptoms. If you have some of these symptoms, the symptoms don't necessarily go away. So muscle weakness. So people will develop a weak muscle. They say that it's because of lack of use, but it's usually because of the nerve damage. You know, the nerves aren't stimulating. Numbness and tingling. And it's interesting because I will only get tingling at nighttime. At nighttime when I'm sleeping, and that's when like the bottom of my feet will kind of be itchy and tingly, and it can affect your face and your arms and your legs. Right now, like I said earlier, it is mostly the left side of your body, but it's not exclusive with everyone. You may have the opposite where you have some pain where it feels like electrical shocks are misfiring, but they're sort of shooting down your arm, down your leg, around your neck, and that can be unpleasant. Now, I have not had any, very, very little, just a little bit of sharpness in my hand, the hand that's mostly numb. Occasionally, now to me, it just makes me think, okay, there's at least they're still firing enough, the nerves, for me to even feel pain. Because I'm just completely numb. I'm on the numb side. A lot of people have bladder problems. So they may urinate frequently or they just have the urge to urinate. Bowel problems, especially with women, constipation, being, you know, backed up basically, is a very, very early sign. If there's no explanation, they know that they're drinking enough water,
Now, do you think that that's just a sensation, or is it real? Like, is it just perceived or real?
It's real. It's not perceived. It sounds like you haven't been backed up a whole lot, because it's very unpleasant, and you know it's not something that's perceived, because you know if you went to the bathroom that day. And it's not healthy to not have a bowel movement every day.
It actually affects the rate that they go to the bathroom.
Mm-hmm. Another is fatigue, and so you're just tired. You know, you have bursts of energy, but you just find that you're just tired most of the time. Even after sleeping 8 hours, you get up and you may have your morning coffee, or you know, even do, you know, get yourself organized for the day. But by the time you're ready to go to work, if you're still working, you're exhausted and you need a nap. I've heard people say that they'll take a shower. When they get out of the shower, which usually invigorates most people, they need a nap. So it's just, you know, you're just a constant, you're just tired all the time. Dizziness and vertigo. And so that has to do with my disorientation. You know, when I'd be driving, just sort of being disorientated, where am I at, sort of the vertigo. Having muscle spasms or having muscle cramps. And what's interesting is on my side that I can't feel, my left leg, sometimes I don't know I'm having a muscle cramp, but I'll look down at my toes and they're all crooked and all funny and strained, and it's like I'm having a muscle cramp, and I still have to wait it out, just like if I was feeling the pain, you know, and I wait it out and I feel my muscle, and then all of a sudden it starts to get, you know, soft. But it's kind of scary when you don't feel it, but you can see that it's happening. So tremors, a lot of people will like have shaky movements. Now, I do occasionally, but usually it's at night, and it will wake me up, like just a jerking movement. Vision problems, double vision. I had some floaters. They call them floaters and flashes. And it was actually in my right eye. Floaters and flashers. And the flashes were not fun, because it's like white lightning. But
so floaters is an MS symptom?
It is. There's other reasons why people have floaters and flashes in their eye, but this is just on the list that you may have, MS on the list if you have, MS have this, but people that have flashes and floaters don't necessarily have multiple sclerosis. Right.
Because MS is it's a blanket of symptoms. There's a whole list of symptoms that a person will have.
But it all leads back to the myelin sheath. Your immune system is attacking, you know, your immune system. So it's awful. So some people do get depressed. I can see why, you know, someone would get depressed, because the nerve fiber damage in the brain, it can trigger, you know, emotional changes, and that sometimes will often bring on depression. The thing that I noticed the most was my gait, or when I'm around other people that have MS, part of my multiple sclerosis group, they walk a little differently. Have you noticed? You've seen me walk around enough.
I've known you for a little while.
So, forever.
So I have. There's no period in time where I noticed a drastic change.
Oh, okay.
But I suppose maybe.
I feel it. It's sort of like, because I'm more cautious when I walk, because I don't want to fall.
Maybe I'm not aware enough of, or maybe it was a, I know I've seen you when you, before you had trouble walking, and off the top of my head, maybe slightly, it's hard for me to pinpoint.
Would I ever look like I was drunk? Do I need to get the t-shirt? I'm not drunk, I just have MS.
I don't think I've ever There was one time that I saw you, and I thought that you seemed to me to, as if you were having a panic attack. Is what it looked like to me.
So, Nick, was I having a panic attack?
I asked you, are you having a panic attack? And your response was, no, I'm not having a panic attack. I'm having trouble walking, and I forgot my cane. And so you're having trouble walking, but for some reason it appeared to me as if you were, you know, having a panic attack. And I suppose maybe if you were a stranger and I didn't know who you were, maybe I could have interpreted you as having been drunk, maybe. I suppose
maybe
it's because I knew that you couldn't have been drunk. And so I, you know, well, what could that be? It must be a panic attack. Must have been something like that.
Oh, well, thank you for asking. I don't actually recall because every day I have problems walking. So,
okay.
Some other issues with people that have MS is they have some breathing problems. And they refer to this as the MS hug. So it's the feeling that somebody is hugging you so tight. That's what it feels like. So you're trying to, you know, catch your breath.
Someone's giving you a bear hug.
A bear hug, a big MS hug. They call it the MS hug. People in the, because I'm a member of all these MS sites, and so we all talk to each other, and that's where we coordinate. What did your doctor tell you? It really has been a saving grace for me when I'm feeling kind of down. Like, okay, let's see what everyone else are they feeling the same thing? And typically, usually are. Swallowing problems. So I noticed that years ago, even just taking my vitamins, you know, drinking water first thing in the morning, always had some, you know, struggling and headaches and some hearing loss. My issue with hearing, and I did pose this question on one of the MS sites, is the sounds are very strange to me. I could hear a buzzing and I have no idea where it's coming. I don't know which direction, if it's what part of my house or what part of my office. If I hear a knocking, it might as well be an explosion. If I even brush lightly with my clothes against a wall, it sounds like someone's screaming. Everything is at a loud level of sound. So anytime I hear buzzing or beeping, it bothers me a lot and it scares me. It's kind of scary. So, and I pose that question, and yes, a lot of other people, you know, had that issue too. Now, I want to mention that something else that a lot of the other people we were talking about is what triggered it, because that is not uncommon. In fact, scientists believe that an environmental trigger or, you know, something that's happened in your life that's developed can trigger MS. And in my case, I very specifically remember I was in contact with mold. I was in a home for many, many months that had mold, and that was my trigger, because I woke up one morning and I had no feeling from the waist down, and that was the beginning.
Is this the trigger of your initial MS?
No. This is in 16, in 2016, when it actually
came
back.
So when your remission ended, when your MS relapsed?
Yes. It was my very first, but it was because I did have a major trigger. It may not have relapsed if I didn't have this mold incident. And I went to the doctor, and I really knew that it had to do with mold. I just intuitively felt it. And they did some blood tests. And of course, when I read the labs, as if I can't read my own labs, they didn't test for mold at all. So I did some research and discovered that the best way to find out if you have mold in your body is by doing a urine test. So I shamed my doctor into doing, this is just my regular doctor, not my neurologist, into doing testing to see if I had mold in my urine. And his exact words when the results came back is, your body is chock full of mold. And so that's when then they, you know, the mold, you can get mold out of your body simply by taking yourself out of the situation, you know, and then eventually it does take some time. And then I took some activated charcoal and that helped get rid of the mold. So I did my own research on how to get the mold out of my body. So
at the time you suspected you had mold, but you didn't know for sure yet. So you were still in the environment
Yes. And then once I just, what happened was the home was the entire interior of the home was just ripped out and replaced. An insurance company. I mean, where they had mold people come and they're like, oh yeah, everyone get out now. So.
And I know that there's different types of mold.
It was the bad mold. It was the black mold. Okay. So, it, you know, but that was just happened to be my trigger. Now, what do people do? You know, there's so many medicines that you can take for MS. And I've done several different, you know, my neurologist has put me on several different medicines.
And I would also point out that that would explain why anyone else in that environment, if they didn't have MS themselves, they might not have the extreme symptoms.
That's right.
From the mold, but
mold symptoms alone can be horrible.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, a lot of people,
They might not be. You know, why is your symptoms different than others, though? So that would be an explanation for that.
Well, that was just happened to be my trigger. Yeah. And my symptoms were pretty extreme. So now, you know, what can you do? When they think about it, about MS with scientists, they've determined that it very well may be a vitamin D deficiency. And that's something that starts it. So a lot of people that live in areas where they're further away from the equator, let's say, the further away, that's where there's more people that have MS, or people where they're closer to the equator, where they just have, you know, more, it's just sunnier days throughout the year, there's less amount of people. But it's, so some people with MS may move to an area where there's more sun so they can get, you know, vitamin D, because your body, you know, can produce vitamin D from the sun. And, but it's kind of a catch-22, because MS in itself, we have a high sensitivity to heat.
Okay.
So now we've, you know, I'm in Houston, and it's very, very hot, which is great. I'm getting a lot of vitamin D. But
So vitamin D can reduce the odds someone gets MS?
It can. And if you have MS, they believe that it can reduce some of the symptoms. Now, I have just started on, his name is Dr. Coimbra. He's a Brazilian MD. And he specifically works with patients that have MS. And he's putting them, they call it the Coimbra protocol.
Of course, protocol is what I was going to guess.
What?
That protocol is what, whenever a doctor develops, you know, a set of.
That's why he named it after himself. So yeah. It's his protocol. And so what it is it's taking 20,000 units, UIs, of vitamin D per day. Where somebody, a regular multivitamin might have 1,000.
So I think that'd be 500 micrograms, I'm guessing.
I don't know. I actually looked that up.
I believe it's 25.
I thought it was 0.25.
I think, but 25 micrograms comes out to 1,000 units.
Oh, well, there you go. So now convert that to, you know, milligrams. So, in fact, I told the girl.
Oh yeah, it'd be 0.25 milligrams.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. So that must be. Anyway, so I'm doing that on my own, and I feel like maybe a little bit better.
I'm sorry, 0.025. I don't want anyone to get those numbers wrong.
Yes, that is it. So they believe that it is also a vitamin B12 deficiency, and so I do take vitamin B12. I take it, you know, under my tongue with a tablet that dissolves, because your body, if you just take it in a pill tablet, I think we talked about that last week or 2 weeks ago about vitamins. So, however, this is kind of really interesting research. Benadryl, allergy medicines they actually believe they have more research to do, but the little initial studies have shown that something as simple as Benadryl may repair the myelin sheath.
Okay.
That is huge.
That it being an antihistamine and having an effect on, you know, how your immune system works. And antihistamines are your body attacking itself, you know, causing inflammation.
So exactly. So
interesting.
Now, how much, you know, people that have allergies, they will take allergy medicine all the time.
And I would also add, people that don't even have allergies, Benadryl is over the counter sleep medication also. So people that have any sleep medications might already have Benadryl.
So I was reading recently that, of course, the FDA is saying, well, if you take, you know, too much Benadryl and you don't have allergies, as if that would make a difference.
That's just going to put you to sleep.
No, what they're saying is that it could be really hard on your body and cause all sorts of other problems. And it's like, I don't even know what to say about that. But it's like reading a label. The FDA says, if you take this drug, you could die.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then some of them you can, but there's not a gauge, like a percentage. It's sort of like these warning.
The disadvantage with that would be if you rely on it to go to sleep, then you could have trouble going to sleep without it. I think that's the only real danger with Benadryl. But if you're taking it for another reason, there's people that take it every day, and I don't think it has. I don't know what the long-term effects are, but I don't think they're too damaging.
Okay, well, so now I'm gonna try it.
They might not be damaging at all.
I'm gonna try it. They've only done it in trials.
I'm not an expert, though. I just want to put that out there. So when I see it,
I'm not either. I mean, this is not actually my field.
Okay.
So, but I have MS, so I know more than, you know, the average person, I guess. I am going to try the Benadryl. I'm already doing the Dr. Combright protocol, and I am going to try the Benadryl. Now, that study was done, I believe, in 2017, and it was a small study, but almost everyone, they believe that it helped repair their myelin sheath, although there isn't an MRI where they can actually pinpoint the actual, because it's so tiny,
so they
your
had
nerve,
some
so
improved,
they can't really see.
Did they have improved symptoms?
Yes.
So what's the entire protocol?
This is just taking a Benadryl. I don't even know the dose.
Okay. Is it Benadryl with vitamin D, or is that?
No, vitamin separate? D. I'm so sorry. Dr. Combray's protocol is just vitamin D. He
okay.
is not part of the research with Benadryl. They're completely separate studies.
Okay.
So, because he started his study years and years ago,
it's a moderately high dosage of vitamin D.
Yes, I mean, it's not ridiculous. If anyone is really low in vitamin D, you would take, you know, 50K.
50K is kind of the higher limit that I've heard
per week.
Oh, per week.
So that would be about the same as what I would, you know. So yeah, per week.
I've heard 50K per day, which is the upper limit that I've read about before. So anything less than that.
The treatments that are available right now. Oh, okay. I wanted to back up.
No, that is a high dosage amount, though.
So a lot of the reason why I believe that the Benadryl, this is why I'm backing up, if it really is a partial cure or cure some people or really does repair the myelin sheath, it's not going to be a big, huge bucks maker for the pharmaceutical company. So I'm just going to put that out there, so I don't think that they're pushing.
Oh, yeah. So, there's not going to be a lot of advertising for it.
Yeah.
You're going to have to find that out on your own.
Yeah, exactly. But there are a lot of medicines that they believe that will maybe stabilize it or put you in remission. I've been on several over the last few years. One of them, I didn't notice a difference. Right now I'm on no pharmaceuticals at all because I'm going a natural. So I haven't noticed any difference. The medicine that I was on is $80,000 a year.
$80,000?
$80,000. Yeah. The medicine before that was $80,000 plus per year. Okay, one was a shot that I had to give
and
myself.
And you've tried both of those?
Yeah. I've tried two major drugs that were designed for people that have multiple sclerosis.
And you didn't notice any much difference?
I think I did not notice a difference, and it made me weird. Just weird in the head. I didn't like it. So anyway, so oh gosh, it's so funny. There's other I mean, I can go, there's so many other you know, things that you can do. A lot of people are taking medical cannabis. That's not something that I would do, but for some reason that helps with the pain and the muscle stiffness.
There is supposedly a protective property from medical cannabis. I don't know if it's, you know, what side it is or what the exact compound is in it, but that if it has a protective quality to it, it would make sense in working similar to how like a Benadryl might work.
The Benadryl, they're saying repairs, or it may repair. Cannabis, I think, is really just to relieve pain and muscle stiffness, or some people that have some issues sleeping.
Okay, so the cannabis is more to relieve the symptoms.
All of the drugs, the pharmaceutical drugs, are for your symptoms.
Okay.
No, none of them are really designed, because Benadryl's the first one I heard about. So it's just something that I'm not telling anyone to run out and get it that has MS. I'm just saying do your own research. And it's something that I think would be great to research. Okay, so I want to talk about, I don't know why, is the funny things that people say to me. And I went on my MS group and I posed this question.
Funny things that people say to people with MS.
Yeah, what I did was I went on one of my MS groups and I asked everyone, okay, I'm going to go on this radio show and I want you to tell me just funny things that people have said or insulting things. And I've had people say just funny things to me. I think everyone means well. Nobody wants to insult you. So occasionally someone wants to insult you, the ones that don't believe you, you know, and they say little snide things. But I think the number one thing that people would say to somebody who has MS would be, you don't look sick. It's like, oh, okay. Well, I mean, what are you supposed to do? You know, if you do.
thank you.
Yeah. Okay. thank you. I think a better response or a better, you know, a question that someone may, or a statement they
maybe
may
you,
make.
Maybe you just need to take that as a compliment.
It's usually a little more insulting because it's like
you don't think it's meant as a compliment.
Maybe what they're saying is you don't look sick, and what they're not saying is so you probably aren't.
Oh, you're a fibber.
Yeah. So that's okay. How I take it, at least. Well, you don't look sick. Oh, well, I'm glad that, you know, I don't even know what to say. I would prefer if somebody said something like, you know, how are you doing? You always kind of look the same to me. You know.
Oh, but they're referring to your MS. You don't look sick, referring to your MS, which I know you've said.
Yes,
you've
specifically,
had.
These are things that people have said to MS, people that have MS. So,
okay.
But that's a really common one. Like, you don't look sick, so, you know. They may say, you know, my neighbor has the same thing, and she's fine now. I was like, okay, well, you know what? I think that is really great, you know, that your neighbor is fine. You know, congratulations to her. Make sure to tell your neighbor that I hope to be fine like she is someday. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, great. Everyone has a neighbor. Or everyone has
Or I have a neighbor and she's in a wheelchair.
Oh,
why aren't you in a wheelchair?
Okay, you know, that's really interesting because I was going to my mailbox, and every day I try to go to my mailbox. It's two houses away from my front door. I go out my front door, go two houses. There's my cluster box. I usually will bring a cane. I will always bring a little satchel with me because I can't carry the mail back because I don't have feeling in my hand and negotiating the key to get in my mailbox. So I was walking without the cane one day. And then the next day I had a cane and a neighbor said to me, "So how is this, the MS, you know, how's it going?" And I thought, oh, that's really nice. She remembered. And I said, "Well, you know, it's going as good as it's going." I didn't know really what to say. She goes, "So, do you really have MS?" I went, "Yeah, I'm pretty sure I do. My neurologist thinks I do." "Sometimes that you don't have a cane." I said, "Well, that's, you know, part of the disease. You know, we have good days and bad days. And, you know, I don't even know how to respond. But when somebody just tells me, you don't have MS, and her final words were, "You know, you need to knock it off with the cane because, you know, we're not sympathizing with you. Like, I'm just seeking attention, walking two houses away from my home to my mailbox. Somehow I'm hoping that people are going to be looking out their window at that time and I can get some sympathy." I mean, that's basically what this person was saying. So another thing that my group...
Do you think that a lot of people that have MS, because I know you've mentioned some of these before, and that I think it's something that for you, from what I've gotten, it's sometimes hard on you for, you know, when people say these, you know, it's insulting. But
well, it certainly isn't nice.
Do you think, do most people that have MS, is it common for them to get, when you go on these sites, these MS sites, do other people that have MS commonly get responses like that from people?
Yes.
Okay.
That people just say that, you know, like, you're fine. You know, you were fine yesterday, so why can't you go to the mall with me? Well, mm-hmm. Because today I'm going to be in bed all day.
Because today I'm not fine.
You know, but...
But they don't believe it.
They don't understand okay. That, yeah. Another thing that people say, and this was from my MS site again, well, at least it's not...
ABC.
At least you're not in a wheelchair, or if you're in a wheelchair, well, at least you're not paralyzed from the neck down, or if you're paralyzed from the neck down, well, at least you're not dead, or at least you're not, you know, I mean, it's like, at least you're not, you know, well, I read up on MS, and it's not a death sentence. Oh, okay, well, I guess I'm happy that it's not a death sentence, but how insulting to the people that do have diseases where they're surely going to die soon. I mean, it's horrible. I'm supposed to feel better. It's just not safe.
I can understand how it would confuse people.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Although I would, yeah.
I know.
So, you know, some of these are seeming not that funny, actually.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess, you know, maybe it's because I've taken an attitude that I just have to look at it.
Oh, these are funny. When MS people are talking to others and said that, and then, right.
True,
this
okay.
This is what you laugh about with other MS people.
Oh, okay. Well, then I probably shouldn't have mentioned the humor.
To me, it just kind of seems like, these kind of sound insulting, actually.
It is, rather. I had somebody say to me, I'm so sorry. On the site, somebody told me that they get people that will say, "Maybe you just need more sleep."
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it's like, oh, probably that's it. You know, I mean, what do you say to that? Probably. You know what? I've got an extra hour every night, and then I won't have MS. I mean, it just doesn't work that way. Because sometimes I'm raring to go, but I slept for 2 days before because I'm gearing up for maybe an event or if I'm going to, you know, meet somebody for lunch. And even that, I don't know if I'm going to be able to make it. But well, I had someone say to me the opposite. And it was, this is somebody who claimed that they read up on multiple sclerosis and they really mm-hmm. were concerned for me. And then they were mad because I couldn't do something with them. And they said, "You know, you sure do sleep a lot." Mm-hmm. And I said, "Well, I don't think that I sleep a lot. You know, I will sleep 6 hours straight, typically, and then I take a nap. And people aren't used to, you know, calling someone and they're actually napping. Mm-hmm. So it was, you sure do sleep a lot. And it wasn't meant to be nice.
You know, okay. It's like, well, there is that. I think where that can kind of come from is if a person oversleeps, you know, if a person sleeps, I think, you know, more than 9 hours, then it can kind of make them more tired, lethargic during the day.
Yeah.
If they sleep too long. So maybe it's coming from that angle.
Yeah. Okay. No,
that's not how they
meant
this.
I wish it was, but it wasn't. But no, okay. It was like, you sure do sleep a lot. You know, you're always sleeping. But I sleep about 8 hours.
Okay.
You know, in a 20, I mean, so I don't sleep a lot. But so if I sleep 6 hours straight and then I take an hour or a 2 hour nap in the middle of the day, people aren't used to that. Mm-hmm. If they call me, what are you doing? Well, I just got up. I took a nap.
And something interesting to note is that there's a lot of cultures out there where it's very common for most people in the country to take a nap in the middle of the day.
And studies have shown that taking a nap, so, you know, an hour and a half nap.
I believe in China, there's, I don't know if it's officially scheduled, but there's an hour or 2 hours during the day where stores are expected to be closed for nap time.
Right. I was in Italy years ago, and the entire city shut down. They call it siesta.
Okay.
You eat lunch and you take a nap.
Okay.
Every shop, because everyone does that. Why would they?
So even, Italy is another one of those cultures.
Why would they be open? Yes.
Okay.
I mean, they appreciate their nap time. So it's just funny. So, oh, but you're doing so well.
And I imagine in those, it's shown that, you know, dinner probably shouldn't be your biggest meal. And I know in America, dinner is for most people is their biggest meal. But in cultures where maybe lunch is your biggest meal, I suppose if you eat a lot, then I probably would want to take a nap, depending on what I'm eating, I suppose.
I want to take a nap right now.
Yeah.
I love taking my nap. And you are correct. Yes. If you take a nap in the middle of the day, mm-hmm. what it means is you're lazy.
Oh, right. Yeah.
You are not being productive. And there's only value if you're being productive.
Yeah, I think napping's not an American. It's not American to be napping.
It's un-American
yeah.
to nap. We should start. I'm going to start a napping program.
You know, napping doesn't make us un-American. So this is the Brighter Life program. And
yay. Are we done? Are
yeah,
you cutting me off? Is
yeah,
that the deal? Okay,
yeah, we
everyone.
We went over a little bit.
If you have any questions, you can go ahead and send me a direct email at thebrighterlife@mail.com, and brighter is spelled B-R-I-G-H-T-E-R. Thank you, everyone, for listening.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Are you a business owner? Did you know that the government is holding funds right now for your business? The program is called the Employee Retention Act. It's done through the IRS and part of the CARES Act. And it's available to just about every business. This could mean literally hundreds of thousands of dollars into your business. This is not a loan. It's 100% legal and paid directly to you. Go to getmymoneyback.net. That's getmymoneyback.net to watch a brief video and find out how you can qualify. Getmymoneyback.net. Go there now.
Do you need toner for your Epson, Hewlett-Packard, Canon, Brother, Apple, or Sharp printers? Look no further than Laser Technologies. In business for over 20 years, they offer the lowest prices on toner on the web. They can also repair your laser printers and toners fast and easy. Call their expert staff today at 561-792-9600 or email us at service@laser-technologies.com for all your toner needs. All toner is shipped nationwide. Why wait? Get the lowest prices on toner. Call or email us today.